You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I sang Dixie as he died.
903 on the West Coast, 1103 in the central part of the country where Tex Musselman resides. What's going on, Tex? How's life today? Wait, say that again?
I said you're funny.
What?
Hey, want to hear something?
Yeah, of course. I always want to hear something.
This is great. Let me send her a text real quick and say, hey, I'm talking about you.
Uh-oh. Henrietta?
No. You don't ever say that. I'm going to blame you now. Never say that.
What did we...
Remember, we just came up with tea.
Oh, tea. Tea.
Okay. Iced tea.
Iced tea.
Sweet tea.
Sweet tea.
Unsweet tea sometimes.
Angry tea. Hot tea. Cold tea. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to the hospital today with Ralph in Fort Worth.
All right, tell everybody who Ralph is.
Ralph Kiss. You know who Ralph is.
I know who Ralph is, but everybody else might not keep track.
Ralph Kiss is a friend here in Granbury, great American, served in the Air Force, air traffic controller. So now we go to the hospital every once in a while so you can get some physical therapy, honestly. So we had...
Okay.
So on the way back...
Continue the story.
Yeah, I'm trying to type and read and then talk to you sometimes.
Here we go.
So I'm trying to separate my brain. On the way back, we're talking, we're having, you know, so I'm talking to Buck on the phone, you know, Buck.
You know, I do know
every
Buck.
Time he answers the phone, yeah. He's like, what's up there, great guy, Mike Musselman, you know? So yeah, that was going on. So we're talking on there and then I see a phone call. You know, so I look at it, and I'm like, Weatherford, and it's just a phone number. And I'm like, don't see the number, wasn't in the address book. You know, so I was like, okay, no big deal. Wrong number, right? So I get done talking to Buck, we're starting to come into town, and I get something in my, I just kind of reach down my phone and look, and I normally never, ever, ever call back a missed number when it's not associated with a contact, right?
Why would you?
Yeah. Why would I want to talk to the Pakistani FBI? Yeah,
exactly.
Or
why?
Yeah. Or the Indian Bangladeshi IRS.
Right.
Right?
Right, right, right.
And so go through that.
Why?
I didn't have time today.
Why did
Otherwise,
you?
Normally I would love to talk to the Pakistani-based FBI.
Right.
So I pick up the phone, and lady answers the phone, and she goes, hi. She's like, hi, this is Angie. I said, hey, hi, and this is Mike. She's like, hi, and you know, really kind of upbeat. And I said, just calling back a number that I saw a missed call from. So I'm just calling back to figure out what is it, you're trying to get in touch with. She goes, oh, hi, I was talking to, and she said something like, Lise Erica from your office. And before she would go on the story, I said, that would be very difficult because I don't have an office. Two, I don't know an Erica. And so she's like, ooh, must got the wrong number. And I said, so what do you do? What is it you do, Andy? She goes, well, you know, I deal in the, beverage. You know, and she's trying to talk to somebody. And I said, I drink those type of things, you know, coffee, tea, water, ice, but I don't have those things in my, I don't have an office to put them in. So I said, no longer employed. Kind of self-employed whenever I want to be, but I'm retired. She goes, really? From what? So I said, Marine Corps. So we're talking a little about that. And then I said,
Are you kidding? Are you lonely or something? Why are you?
No. So this is get that phone call. So, but check it out. So she goes, what do you, you're an instructor. What do you teach? And I said, well, I teach a bunch, you know, so I tell her, I teach a bunch of women self situation awareness, self defense. She goes, oh my God. Really? So she goes, I have a daughter, 16, and we're kind of going through that right now. And we've been talking about this with the neighborhood. So it ends up, short story short, this is kind of like a divine intervention on her. Someone, because she needs this in her life, and so do some of her friends. So now we're going to hook this up, and then I'm going to go out there and teach this class to these women.
Well, maybe that's a lesson for you. You should always answer your phone because you could.
Yeah. So she's got, a young daughter, 16, going through the same problem. She's had some issues with some, people coming up to her daughter, doing things. And right now she's doing the right thing. I mean, she's confronting it when she sees it, but it's kind of explaining to her daughter and other people to what else to look for. So again, we talk about the avoidance, right? To avoid it, to see it for what it is, and to avoid it. To make sure you're not in that. Next thing you know, you're not in, all of a sudden the door closes behind you. You're in a freaking old phone booth, and now you've got to fight. So, and people that don't know what a phone booth was, it was a small contraption, glass on all four sides, a sliding door that was like an accordion. But there's only room enough for really one person. So when we say a knife fighting in a phone booth, that's a tight fit. You don't want to be in that situation because no matter what, you're getting hurt. No matter how good you are, you're going to get hurt. So, yeah, it turned into like almost an hour conversation. We were talking about this. We were talking about that. She was like, oh, my gosh, this is great. I needed this. This is kind of like that. I dialed your number by accident, but it turned out to be I needed it.
Now we're gonna get married.
No.
Are you gonna turn over a new leaf? You're gonna always answer.
No, I'm never gonna answer.
Why?
I'd be the Pakistani FBI.
No, you'd be the anti-Pakistani. You would be the welcome one.
I'm not always in the mood to talk to the Pakistani FBI.
I know you're never in the mood to like. Why? And then you start engaging.
Sometimes I am, Max. Sometimes I go on the internet and I search for that number where there's blogs and someone says, "Hey, this number called me," and sometimes I call that number.
You need to find something to do.
I do that like when I'm on the road. Like,
the world does like right not now. Need you doing that.
I need to make a list of like, hey, these phone calls, I need to, there's like, they have the Indian, Bangladeshi IRS, Pakistani FBI. What other one's a good one out there?
The Danish, you won the Danish lottery. How do we get you your 1.7?
Nigerian gold prince.
Yeah. Right? Lottery. How do we get you your winnings? If you could send us social security number in your bank account.
I just want a diamond mine East Africa, for Christ's sake.
I won that in Ramadi in 2004. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was even entered in that. This is awesome.
It doesn't matter. Isn't that great?
It's like, I'm a millionaire. I'm out.
Yeah.
How do I get out of my commitment here?
How do I sign for the documents to become a blood diamond guy?
Yeah. Yeah, so I asked Colonel Dunford, "Hey sir, I think I just won a Danish lottery worth $1.7 million. How do I get out of my reserve commitment for the year?" And his nose went down, his glasses go down to the tip of his nose, and he looks at me and he says, "Are you that stupid?" And then he says, "Oh, I forgot, you're not Jesuit educated." I said, "You're only Christian Brothers educated." That figures, Mac. Yeah, Mac, go ahead. Give him all your personal information. See how that works out. Goodbye.
What? You call these guys liars?
What? You mean it's not true? I kind of did a little, you and I have talked about things that you see. Iraq was a great education in a lot of different ways for me. But you heard Mike and I talk about nothing is as it seems. If they're showing you something, it's because they want you to see it, and then they're going to use that against you.
What happened?
Well, no, you and I were talking about that Jeff Flake video the other day. I was reading the story about who did that and how they set it up, and I thought, and the thought just came, from the part of my brain that I don't control that says this is exactly like Iraq. Nothing is what you think it is. It is all choreographed,
No.
So when you see stuff
and
like
once
that,
you make that decision that, oh, this is exactly, you're a dumbass. You have just crossed the threshold into dumbassery.
What?
When you believe that
what?
It is this way, like, oh, this is by chance and circumstance that it happens.
Right.
This
girl, you know, was saying this to this senator, this heartfelt speech. It's all the battle that goes on, what, for the hearts and minds of the nation, done through set up viral videos that, and this is one of them. And but that line that went through my head, like, this whole thing's a setup. It's a setup.
Right.
And so, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The, hey, Mac, tell Gunner that he needs to listen to the interview that you did with Jack Riley. Be curious his take on it. Yeah, you need
okay,
to
okay, first of all, you don't tell me anything.
You need to do that. That's an order.
No.
That's an order.
You can't order me.
Oh, I can.
How do you leave freaking smoke and crack?
Yes.
You gotta
get
out that crack pipe.
Oh no. Oh no.
Your teeth are gonna start rotting.
You're of the pineapple tribe, okay? I order, you say yes, sir. I'll even say yes.
What's that?
I'll even accept yes, Mac. Because we're familiar like that. Okay.
Whoever is on the other line with me, put Mike McNamara back on.
So yeah. No, you need to listen to Squad Leader and
okay, that's better. You need
somebody.
To.
No, if I have to order you, I will order you. Okay?
Oh, for crying out loud! Here we
Don't make me invoke
you. You know, the last time I was actually ordered to do something.
Hold on, let me think.
Let's go back.
Oh my god! Now you're gonna hear the problem of Mike Musselman.
No, seriously. When was the last time I was actually ordered to do something?
Well, I mean, I guess you executed orders? You executed orders to retirement, so I would say probably when you retired. You executed those orders.
No, that would probably be it. So the only time that anybody ever ordered me was through correspondence.
Possibly. knowing you, yes. And your manipulative ways.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, the last time someone actually issued me, like,
do this.
Yeah. Because it was always kind of like, I mean, even with John Nicholson, because Nicholson was never that way. He was always like, hey, what do you think? You think you can do this?
Well, let me tell you. If you have to be ordered to do something,
then you're a screw up.
Yeah. Either they're screwed up or you're screwed up. But you've now reached logheads. And if smart,
yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's why I say I don't remember the last time I was ordered to do something. Because when we never were ordered to do something. Because we were always part of it. They knew, like, they didn't have to say anything. Like, Major McNamara, I order you to be the SWO. No. Hey,
order
jackass,
you
get out of here before you walk out with a bloody nose. My nose ain't bleeding. I said, before it starts bleeding. It's not going to bleed. I don't get nose bloods in dry heat. You're not catching on, are you? I'm going to headbutt you right in the damn nose.
I had to give somebody a calm guy who refused to do something in the middle of, like, a firefight, and we're trying to fire something, and we couldn't get through, and he looks at me, and this is like a gunnery sergeant or mass sergeant, and I send somebody, hey, tell so-and-so they've got to, you know, the comm guy. I can't remember what it was. And whoever came back, a sergeant or something, came back, sir, he says he will not do that. Like, what? Sir, he says he will not do that. So I walked in there, and I gave him, you know, one of these. I'm giving you a direct order, Gunny, to do it right now, or there's going to be trouble in here. I'm going to throw you out of here, and I'm going to bring somebody else in here that's going to do it. So I'm going to count to five, and if you don't, it was that. It was like, you know, remember in the COC when you went left, there was the log center, and then around the corner from that, down the hallway, was the comm center. It was in there. And I was furious. Somebody who doesn't
know. Yeah, I'm furious still today.
I'm getting worked up. It was that kind of crazy shit in the middle of trying to shoot something or save somebody. Somebody says, no. No, I will not do that. We will not fire toes in the offensive mission. Toes are a defensive weapon and can only be used in the defense. Like, what the fuck did you just say?
I remember I was one of the first guys. So Neller was a one star. And I had to go explain to Neller why we shot a, why I ordered a guy to shoot a javelin at a dude.
Why did you?
Because he was the only thing that could hit him.
Yeah, that was a short
one. They were smart enough to figure out that they could stay out of our, you know, small arms threat envelope. He's probably like 2,200 yards, if that. I mean, yeah, we could lob a 50 caliber in there, but collateral damage, man. We can't have that round skipping all over the place. So luckily, Shithead was like right next to like, there's almost something there. I want to say like a bin or something. There was a big metal thing like right next to him. And I asked the javelin guy, I said, can you target that thing right next to him? Top attack. And he's like, sure. Tone. Boom. And so when you see a javelin come at you, you're probably thinking, what the fuck? Also, you see this missile come up and then go straight up in the sky. And you're like, stupid Americans. Can't even shoot a missile right. Well, because Iraqi doesn't understand physics, you know, in the Pythagorean theory about the connecting to the triangles.
Whoa.
So, yeah. Missile goes up, top apex, comes seeking down subsonic, boom, obliterator. But someone got like a butt hurt when we turned this report in. Oh, because I didn't do it once. I did it like five times. So I needed like five new javelins. And they're not cheap, right? They're kind of pricey. And so when I asked for five new javelins, and they were like, well, what happened to your other five javelins? Said, I shot him. They said, at what? I said, people. You can't shoot javelins at people? Sure you can. We just did. What do you mean you can't?
So why?
I love that. I love when people say, you can't do that. I just did.
Was this in 2006 in Fallujah?
Yeah, this is when you were there.
Right. And Neller was the deputy.
Because the ammo chief warrant officer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I forget his name. He was a piece of work. He was all butthurt, so he goes to somebody and says, Gunner Musselman over at 3-5 is shooting javelin missiles at $100,000+ a piece at one person. So, come see General Miller, which meant come see General Miller.
Did you know him?
Yeah, I knew Bob.
From?
And this is before he did the M203 White Star parachute and made that into the So we're talking about it. And he just asked, like, are you guys doing this? Yeah. You getting good results? Yes, sir. He goes, okay, keep it up.
Neller, yeah. Hey, let me just tell you, Neller is he's a smart guy, but you won't know that.
No.
You won't know that by talking to him. You'll think he's a knuckle dragger because that's how he comes across.
But that's the way he wants to come across. Right. He wants to be perceived that.
Normal
fast forward, guy. Neller, we're up in the division CG when we started sourcing guys to Oman and or Yemen, right? One of the two. Yemen, Oman, same place. And we started sourcing guys there, and we were talking about security at the entry control points for the vehicles, the BCPs. And Neller wanted to use a small, and I was like, wrong choice. God, I mean, our rocketry sucks as it is. We're like, one for five, one hit out of every five rockets. And you want to shoot a small, and don't still worry about collateral damage. That thing goes out, misses an HEDP, goes into the next street, and he's like, and he goes, what? So I said, shoot the practice rounds. Because you're not going to get the explosion. You really don't. But the small rocket, you know, you shoot the practice round. The practice round is a big chunk of metal. You put that right in front of the grill. I don't care how big you got, or, you know, 153 millimeter piece of metal going into your grill at Mach, oh my God, it's going to do some damage. It doesn't have to explode.
Yeah.
Or, hey, you know, I told the same thing, like Mark 19 practice. When you're concerned about collateral damage and, you know, the HEDP and explosive rounds, content of some of these rounds, then use the practice rounds.
Explain to everybody what the practice round is.
They're just inert. They weigh the same. They do the same. They fly the same. They're ballistically matched to coincide with their counterpart, the high explosive round. So, but the inert round lessens the collateral damage because you don't get the fragmentation. So I used to tell guys when we used to be in Iraq, when we go across, I remember one time they said, we don't have enough HEDP, which was high explosive dual purpose. And I said, for a 25 millimeter, I said, so why don't we just shoot TP, which is target practice? It's just a blue headed big chunk of aluminum flying at, you know, 2,300 feet per second. And they looked at me like, wow, what is that supposed to do? Dude, if you just get shot with 25 millimeter TP, the only difference between that and HE is your body's going to have 25 millimeter holes all through it, whereas in HEDP, it'd be have bigger holes because it's going to explode. But nonetheless, you're still going to have holes. And if you shoot a car with 25 millimeter TP, you're not going to get the explosions, but the car ain't going anywhere either. And it actually looks cooler because you don't see the explosions. So it's like, God, you guys don't, duh.
Well, you know, you got to teach people about that stuff. If they're not ammunition guys.
Now, the only thing that wouldn't work in that aspect is don't use hand fragmentation blue body grenades. You're not going to get the same effect.
Yeah, right? Those things are not.
Toss the thing. This thing rolls into the Iraqis. They're like, grenade. And then it goes, poof. Yeah, we're like, what the? Now, to follow it up with the real one, that'd be a joke. You know, like, toss a bunch of blue bodies in there, and they're like, you kind of get them desensitized to the real thing. You're like, ah, stupid Americans.
They never work. These grenades, yeah, they never work. They don't work. And then, they're throwing them,
bam, hit them with the real one.
They're throwing them back at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you start practicing.
Interesting. Interesting. The battle study I did was with a squad leader, and it's really an amazing story, the fight they get into. The most decorated single.
Yeah, I saw fight. That Medal of Honor, yeah. Like or
yeah, pretty amazing. What's amazing though, Mike, is and what's frustrating from a professional point of view, and you think back of the Marine Corps in Vietnam. And sometimes a lack of professionalism and knowledge of you know, people getting sent out to fight, and the guys that are supposed to be supporting them don't do it very well. And that this company gets told 1-9 had just been in a big fight with the NVA. This is up by the DMZ, so they're fighting main force NVA guys. And 1-9 had just gotten a fight up there the week before. So they get sent out and they get told this: I want you to, by the S3, put in 3 platoon ambushes, right, and don't dig in. We don't want them to hear you digging, right? And squad leader's response is, they've been following us since we left Camp Carroll, okay? They've been watching us since we left Camp Carroll. So it's not like we're sneaking up on their asses. So we're not supposed to dig, and we're supposed to set in ambushes? Okay. So now you think of that professionally, and company commander calls and says, hey, look, based on what we've seen out here, 3 smaller positions are not what we ought to be doing out here. And he gets told essentially to do it or he'll be relieved. And so how do you mitigate that? You mitigate that by fires and say, hey, look, here's what I can do for you. I'm going to give me 3 targets to lay adjacent to those platoons. We'll have guns on that. I've got aircraft on 5-minute strip alert. They go for 6 hours with no supporting arms in this fight. 15 Marines killed.
6 hours?
Yeah, 6 hours in this fight. 15 Marines killed, 47 wounded, Medal of Honor, 4 Navy Crosses, 6 Silver Stars, and 3 Bronze Stars awarded. And the fight is literally, you know, hand-to-hand, you know, close quarters in and around this hill. And so you're listening to this and you're like, oh, no, man, that's not how you do it. And it's just, and then people lose their lives. You know, these stories about these, and we were so young in Vietnam too. I mean, guys, your corporal has been in the Marine Corps.
I was super young.
Corporal been in the Marine Corps for, you know, 20 months, is now a squad leader in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
And so, pretty amazing. So, that's what the email's about. Anyway, another email. It's interesting to hear you two talk about the way Iraqis used to choreograph stuff. I didn't realize it at the start of my deployment there, but as we went on, it was that way. Don't believe what you're seeing. You know it's just a trick. Yeah, you know what? It takes a while.
Right.
And because they were good at setting you up for whatever they were going to do. They were good at that. Do you remember a night, were you there when a Marine walked off a firm base on the other side of the river from Havania? So it would have been west of the train station.
What? Okay, wait.
A squad leader took a Marine's rifle away because he was acting crazy, right?
That was our unit, man.
No, it was a reserve unit.
And you sure?
He walked off.
Was it in Fallujah then?
Yeah, it was in Fallujah.
Okay.
Across the river from you guys. It was at that. If you came across the bridge and hung a ladder.
So ours never got reported then.
If you came across the.
Never happened.
If you came across the river and then went left, right, into where the Jalan was, and you went all the way
came
to the.
Across the river.
Or going toward.
Not where the hospital point was.
No.
Okay. So you come across the river. You're coming out of Fallujah. You go across the hospital bridge.
No. You're coming into Fallujah from Havania or from.
Yes. Okay. So you, Jolan District is to the left.
Right. You drive through the Jolan and then you get to the edge of town. There was a small firm base up there.
Yeah, the apartments are up there.
Right. And so out right on the edge of the city, there was a firm base. Dude gets his rifle taken away.
Yeah, that's Luke's unit.
Yeah, Luke's unit would have owned that. Not at that time. A year later, when he was there.
Yeah, that was Luke's area where his battalion was.
They would have owned it. And all of a sudden, they find a helmet and flak jacket and whatever other gear in a pile, and he's gone. And so.
I was there when that happened.
So we have drone looking for this guy. And all of a sudden we see him, and now into our COC comes General Neller and the mess sergeant major. So you talk about your nightmare, your basic nightmare. You have the sergeant major looking at the drone feed, right? Yelling like, hey, tell him to do this. Tell him to go left, right? And Neller's standing behind me, and he's telling me, hey, tell them, you know. And I finally look at Neller, right, who I know. And I said, so you got to stop this. They're watching the same feed, okay? They know what they're doing, okay? And he looked at me, and he said, I'm not leaving, though. I said, you could stay and watch. But can you tell the sergeant, can you walk over and tell the sergeant major just to relax, right? The battalion's got this. You're afraid that, you know, this kid's going to be on TV. He's going to go from having whatever issues he's got to getting being sliced into 1,000 pieces on live on TV and the whole world watching it. And we're not having that. And then we found him. And then the other thing you're sick to your stomach at is somebody's going to hit an ID because everybody's looking for this guy. Somebody's going to get killed, kind of like the Bo Bergdahl thing. Somebody's going to get killed looking for this idiot, right? And that ain't right. And so, thankfully, nobody got killed. And that happened across the river from where Mike was. Here's an email. Can I offer a suggestion for the next time you do gun talk? course. Of course. A couple weeks ago, you started talking about deer season. So I'd just be curious about a segment of Gun Talk that would deal with what Mike considers to be great deer hunting, rifles or shotguns. I would also like to say that I would hope that he would talk about scoping them and whatever other accoutrements he would use. Just a suggestion, getting ready to do a little deer hunting this fall. Would love to hear about it. You know, that is kind of a timely suggestion. So.
Yeah.
So we'll have to do that. We'll write that down.
Yeah, we will.
We'll write that down. Yes, that will be.
I don't
be.
Know what scoping them would be. Scoping out deer?
I think putting a scope on the rifle.
Always. Well, don't. Okay. Go deer hunt. You need three types of optics.
No, well, we're not going to do this segment right now.
No. But as a teaser.
Okay.
Your rifle scope.
I like that.
Your rangefinder and your binos.
Your rifle scope.
Your scope on your rifle. Your rangefinder, and your binos. You need your binos to read wind, you get a clear picture of that animal. You need good glass. Don't get cheap glass. You want to burn through that brush. So look at read wind, laser rangefinder to read range. And I know people say it's cheating. No, it's not. It's called responsible hunting.
What do you mean cheating? Come on.
Well, because I know Montana man's going to say, well, he can shoot a groundhog from a full gallop hanging underneath of a sat on a saddle. Well, actually, a mule.
And then Rudy's going to get confused.
Yeah. Then Rudy's going to get all screwed up. Did he mean a donkey or a mule? And then,
how do you make a mule?
Yeah. And then riding underneath the mule and then shoot it with his left eye. Boom. And hit it in the head. And then we'll go from there. And then it'll be just whatever, a fest. But no, a lot of people still, like, traditionalists are like, oh, I just range estimate. You know, like.
Come on, you can do better.
Yeah, you know, perfect practice makes perfect, boys and girls. Mediocre practice doesn't make perfect.
So the three optics are?
Your binos.
Yes.
Your laser range finder. And your hunting scope. And then we'll talk about those. We'll talk about how to use each one of them in to actually to benefit one another to enhance each one's capability. So,
All right.
Great.
That makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense to be a better hunter.
Be responsible. Yeah, more responsible.
Another email. Can we stop dancing around it? The Red Sox and Yankees are going to play. Can we hear your predictions?
No. Let's dance some more, boys and girls.
The Yankees are going to sweep the Red Sox. Okay?
I hope so.
Let me tell you why. Chris Sale has had shoulder tendonitis, and he's not the pitcher he was. His last two starts, he hasn't thrown above 91, so he's going to get beat. David Price has yet to win in the playoffs. He'll get beat. Both of those games will take place in Fenway. The Red Sox, as good as they are, will then go to Yankee Stadium, where they will win the first game and lose the second game. Boom. Done. Okay, Mike, so I have it 3-1, and I'm being generous. I really think that Yankees are going to sweep him, but 3-1. Okay, your prediction?
I actually hope they get swept. I do, because I don't like living like this. This is horrible. Because they're so freaking good right now. You know, so you look back at the last three games. They met at the end of the season in September.
Right.
And Yankees took them for two out of three on that one.
Right.
But then you look at, you know, the Orioles. They beat the Orioles two out of three. And some of those scores were like football scores. That's the crazy thing about baseball this year. Red Sox have been playing like football scores. You know, 10-3, 19-3, you know, 11 to 6. So, you know, so if you look at the, they played both, I think Red Sox lost, all those games were at home, they Fenway, they lost the first two games, they won the third game. But I don't think their heart was in it.
I don't think their heart was in it. Come on, quit dancing. So make a prediction.
I think Red Sox, and honestly,
yes,
are gonna take the two games at Fenway,
okay,
and then they're gonna beat them at
take
in New
game.
York and end the season for the
Yankees. So I say the Yankees will win, lose, win. I think
I say,
you know what I say. Win.
Yankees
win.
Will lose.
Sweet.
Lose.
And Mike says,
I hate to
lose. All right. You don't have to. It's not like this is personal. I mean, we root for different teams. But
if Bronzy's listening right now, yeah, you get this.
Then it's personal. Bronzy, if you're not for him, you're against him, okay?
You're against him.
It's a personal thing. He is being promoted tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. Colonel Christopher Bronzy.
Dun, yeah.
Dun, dun.
Exactly. And he's being promoted at the infantry officer course and to build Mitchell Hall. And my son's reading the promotion warrant.
He should be promoted, like, at the top of the obstacle course. Like, standing on top. Right? Like, just standing up there. He needs something like Superman, like, you know. I re-enlisted spy rigging off of a helicopter.
No, he's not.
You know who it was?
He's not that guy.
Christian Cowden.
Oh, really?
Yep. He re-enlisted me hanging next to me on a spy rig.
Come on.
Yeah, out of San. We were down in Margarita, but we were up in Mateo, and I was going through Hearst School. I was a sergeant, and I was going through Hearst, you know, helicopter rope at the suspension train.
Mm-hmm.
So I could rig you up, you know, and be the guy that pushes you off of the tower. So I was going through that, and I was getting ready for reenlistment, and I said, hey, I want to reenlist hanging from a helicopter. And they're like, cool, dude, let's do it. So they all came down, and of course, they're all like, yeah, let's get everybody on that rope. So we were the bottom two, and it was funny. I mean, the guy, I don't know who was trying to read it above me. He was trying to read this, like, you know, this citation, and all you could hear was like, sure. So I'm sitting right next to Colonel Cowdery, and we're both kind of like, oh, this is great. You know, and they didn't pin it on me because it would have dropped somewhere on the ground, but we did it while we were spying it. You know, it's kind of the symbolism of it. It was fun.
Wow. That's pretty macho. I think for a lot of people, officers that, at least my peer group, the infantry officer course is kind of a special place. Guys who were fortunate to teach there, it's kind of a special place. And, you know, and again, our friend Chris Bronzy, he could have picked any place. The office of the
not
chair.
Every place.
Well,
no, you
pretty close. Pretty close. Office of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, he could have, but so very cool. Very cool.
They probably would have said no to the Oval Office.
Oh, I don't know.
They would have said no.
We have friends there.
They say no.
We have friends there, so
I don't know, but
you don't know if you don't know until you ask. You know, he would have probably said yes, of course. I'll reenlist you. Yeah. Mr. Kelly, formerly known as General Kelly. But anyway, no, so he'll reenlist here tomorrow. So, and he's a.
Not reenlist, he actually gets promoted.
Yeah, he gets promoted.
Another good buddy of ours takes command today of the 2nd Marine Regiment.
Who?
Gordon Miller. Gordo.
I don't know him.
Yeah. Big Gordo takes. So if he's listening. And so those of the 2nd Marine Regiment, you're in good hands. That is one of the most capable officers that I had ever opportunity to serve with.
Nice.
There's when the Marine Corps gets it right. That's when the Marine Corps gets it right, when they put Gordo Miller in charge of a regiment. So that just made Dave Furness's job easier. No, Gordo was Dave's, like, OPSO. He was Division OPSO before he took over the regiment. He was there at the change command. He sat out, he was sitting out back when we first got to the house, him and his wife. His wife, beautiful little redhead, Gordo, sitting right next to him. But I'm sure you met him. You probably, probably don't know him. And then our other buddy, Big Al Butler, is going to be taking the Warlords. 2-2.
You going to go back for that?
Yeah, I'll be back for that. I've known Al since he was a snot-nosed second lieutenant. Thought he knew everything. Now he's a snot-nosed lieutenant colonel. He still thinks he knows
everything. Mac, I enjoy your intro. I begin listening a few minutes before you go on live. The podcast recording stops. I hear the clicking noise of the mouse, followed by your intro, which I love. Then when it comes to time for your lead into the gunner's intro, I know it was the gunner's request, but I'm just not feeling it. It's followed by the gunner's intense voice, even more intense since you went to Skype. Whoa, Mr. Intensity.
Hey, can you turn my intensity down from 10 to a 3, man?
I can't.
Okay.
Even
no,
more
I mean, on your intensity board.
I don't have an intensity board. There's no intensity switch.
Okay, I'll do it here. The watch.
Hold on. Just off the top of my head, maybe something like the drowning pool, let the bodies hit the floor. Do you know what?
No,
do you know
that's that over song? With.
Do you know that song?
Yeah, that's. I hate that song.
You do?
What yeah, that's it? The one that, let the bodies hit the floor, let the bodies hit the floor. And it just goes apeshit crazy. No. And I think that's Disturbed that sings that, right? Don't play it. It's annoying.
The bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor.
Yeah. I guess it's okay. Every time I hear it, my head goes back and forth like I'm a rocker.
Yeah, I think my...
Disturbed sings that, right?
I don't know. I just teed it up. The video made by me, the program I used was Sony Vegas Pro 8.0. The music is in the video is owned by the Drowning Pool, blah, 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 blah. The, that's like, no, I don't like that. I don't like that. You want to know why? Because it's too much, right?
That sounds called, is that Down with the Sickness? Right?
What?
That song that you just played.
No, it's whatever. Let the bodies hit the floor.
Oh, then it's someone. You know who? You ever heard The Sound of Silence sung by Disturbed?
No.
Oh, brother, you're missing out. You're missing out.
Is it?
I mean, literally.
Is it a good song?
A piece of life.
What am I missing?
The sound, okay, so the music, you know, Simon Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence?
Right. Hello, Darkness. Hello, Darkness, my old friend.
Yeah. That's your, is that Disturbed or that's the?
This is Disturbed. The Sound of Silence.
Hello, Darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you.
Gives me creeps. Gives me the heebie jeebies.
It seems while I was leaving, and the vision that was landing in my brain.
Paul Simon, Art Garfunkel.
Yeah.
What do you think of, like, metallic jewelry sticking out of, like, people's faces?
I think it's cool when it's worn like his. I don't bother me. I like it. I would do it myself, but I support it.
You support it?
Yeah, it's an expression. I love people when they express themselves. He's stronger than most. because he does it in the way he does. So that song.
Yes.
So music is different for me than most people.
Oh my God! Here we go. Okay, why?
It is.
Why?
And I don't know if why because you, of it's
why,
my
why are you so different?
Intelligence.
Why are you so different?
Yeah. Well, this is like I said. This is the pain I live with of being so intelligent and seeing things differently than others. But no, seriously, music to me has always been like I can relate. So I heard this song one day. I was really feeling really bad. I was having a really bad day. Really bad day. And, you know, some dark thoughts came in my head. You know, I just couldn't get rid of them. I started thinking about all the stuff. Just, you know, having a bad day. And this song came for, I don't know how it got on my phone. And more importantly, it was like a, I didn't buy it, but it was like a preview, right? And it came on as a preview. Right. And it was that one part where you're playing just now where it said, you know, hello, darkness, my old friend. Yeah. I've come to talk with you again.
Yeah.
And it really, I sat down and I was listening to it. And I would be like, holy crap. You know, and then how he goes through the battles through the darkness. And it really was kind of, to me, I get kind of inspiration through it. I'm like, okay, speaking to me, I can hear it. I got it. I need the reminder every once in a while, so that's why I listen to it.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of, I think, you know, in high school, instead of studying poetry, if you would study musical lyrics, I think there'd be a lot more young people that wouldn't get, and ultimately, allow that to lead you to into poetry, but study something that is relatable to them, current relatable, and then transition that into something that takes them to maybe wanting to read.
Don't get me wrong, Shakespeare, work of art, but I can't read that shit.
Right.
You're like, but you're right. When you start hearing modern music in not like pop music, but some of the good stuff.
I would say any music, right, that appeals to...
No, not Teeny Bobby.
Again, it is...
I kissed a girl and I liked it. I mean,
No. Not stupid.
Right.
But
yeah, stupid.
But the genre of music, whether it be pop, country, classical, whatever, it's, in my opinion, is irrelevant, but that it speaks to you. And I've thought this in terms of teaching poetry, because I love lyrics of songs. There's a song that Springsteen sings called Nothing Man.
And I hate Springsteen.
It's about a cop who shoots somebody and how his life has changed, but everybody else goes on as normal around him. And he's a great lyricist. And so to me, I thought, you know what? I love thinking about reading the lyrics, right? And then thinking about them. And then when I hear the music, it makes me think. I wish that somebody would have taught poetry like this, because I would have loved to have had discussions about song lyrics and stuff like that. And then I thought, as I've gotten older, well, then you could transition that into a study of classical poetry, about different things. I just thought it was a missed opportunity instead of forcing us to read Chaucer or whoever,
right,
and going, oh my God, what did you think of that? I didn't even understand. I can't understand Old English. What are they talking about?
Yeah, Yeah.
I'm not sure, right? I'm not sure that I... No, but I'm with you. I I can, you know, whether they be rap lyrics or whatever, I enjoy that. I enjoy listening.
And when I was a kid, some of the songs would take me places in my imagination.
Like? Name one.
I was a kid.
Name one and where you went.
And that song, in 1814, we take a little trip. Long, I used to think about that, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going down to fight the British in New Orleans. And I'd imagine what that would, you know, what that would look like.
I would tell you,
when I was little, the song was picking it.
We kind of goofed on it a couple weeks ago, but the Red Baron song.
No, you goofed on it. I was trying to be serious.
The Snoopy.
You kept saying Snoopy.
The Snoopy versus the Red Baron. I used to listen to that. I had the 45 of that, for God's sake. Yeah.
50 man down.
In the clear blue skies over Germany. Yeah. So no, but I've always loved, and I still love music like that. Songs that mean something to me.
The sound of music, Julie Andrews, takes you places. It's fun. It makes you want to run into a grassy field with your arms spread out.
You know where it takes me? It takes me to the night. I would tell you that that's the only movie I recall my family going to as a family.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, but I like you. What the Sound of Music? What do you associate that with? And I remember my youngest sister, who was crouching. Do you remember the scene where they're in the cemetery towards the end of the movie and they're hiding behind the tombstones? My youngest sister, who couldn't have been more than 5 or 6, was hiding behind the chair, kind of peeking over it as they did that, which was kind of humorous as we were in the movie. But it's so much of your life. I mean, when you hear a song, you associate it with something significant in your life. It's amazing, like, how you can't remember where your car keys are, but this song reminds you of this girl, or this song reminds you of there's a song. It's amazing how there's so many bits of data in your brain, yet certain things are just crystal clear associated with certain events. There's a song by a guy named Nelly that I associate with Luke McConnell in Afghanistan. I was getting ready to go to sleep and I was playing music and Luke came in and looking for something, and it was Nelly singing I think it's called Just a Dream, and he throws open like my curtain, and he's like, "What are you listening to?" And I said, "It's Nelly, dog." He's like, "I love the song. I love the song." And so it was just funny. So now I hear it now. My memory of is Luke McConnell, a buddy of ours in Afghanistan, throwing a fit.
Well,
this is the song.
We always associate songs with memories.
He goes, "Mac, you're too old to listen to this." I said, "I'm sorry, man. My musical taste, heavily influenced by my kids."
Don't play the whole thing. Just play like 5 seconds.
And here it is. Yeah, so he comes in and then he starts yelling. So anyway. Yeah, so it's just funny how and why is it that music is so much like that? Why does our brain seize on music and associate that when other things kind of fade from your memory, but music stays almost crystal clear?
Yeah.
And you can remember words from a song. Like, you know, when was the last time you sang Snoopy and the Red Baron? But you can sing it. Yeah. Exactly. But you can remember it. It's kind of interesting. Here's another email. So each of you is predicting a sweep.
No, Matt's not doing a sweep. He said that they'll win one game.
No, I changed.
You did?
Yeah, I don't think they'll win. I think they'll get swept. I think the Red Sox have structural problems.
Yeah.
Here's
regardless, the Red Sox will win.
That's
a no-brainer.
That's more of a hope than a factual statement.
Hey,
I will say this, though.
Have you tried this W2F forecast?
What? I don't know.
There's an app called WTF forecast. You know, like, what the? Forecast?
No.
WTF?
No. forecast in terms of forecasting the future?
Like the weather today. And you can turn the filter down. So listen.
Your face when it's determined to give you wrinkles. This sun is a complete asshole. The sun hates your face and is determined to give you wrinkles. The sun is a complete asshole.
So it gives you,
the sun is literally shining on your ass. Merriam-Webster now says literally can also mean figuratively.
So it gives you the smart-ass answer.
Why do I want that? Why do I want that in my life?
I'm not
because you're a smart-ass.
But two hobbits just threw a ring into my backyard.
I'm not saying it's hot outside. But two hobbits just threw a ring in the backyard. And then if I pick Costa Mesa, because I got Costa Mesa. Here's Costa Mesa.
It's cool outside and no, I don't mean fucking awesome. I mean slightly chilly.
See?
I don't need that. I don't need my weather to be recited by some punk ass human machine.
And you can change the voice.
You can. Like, what are the options on the voice?
Bozeman, Montana. Why does it swears a lot, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about can we get the PG rated version of that?
Yeah, it's now it's getting mad at me because I'm going through. Hey, I'm turning it off. There, it's cursing at me. But it's called WTF forecast. It's pretty funny. It's funny. So I look at it in the morning and I'm like, oh my god. Yes, that's true. It is that hot.
Here's another email.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm a baseball fan, but the last few nights have been awesome. The games on Monday were pretty good. The Dodger game, not so much, but the Cubs-Brewer game was great. Actually, it was, and then the Cubs-Rocky game was...
Oh, that was crazy.
That was great. I love staying up watching baseball. Baseball has these dramatic moments that the other sports wish they could have because you just hang on the pitch.
Not always, though.
It's
most
awesome.
Of the time, one out of every five.
No,
most
you're
of
right.
the time,
you're
they
right.
go and you fall asleep.
For high drama, I really, really enjoy it. And if you're a baseball, hockey fan, this is a great time of year. And college football, I know you guys don't discuss the NFL. It's pretty amazing.
Awesome.
It's pretty amazing how you guys have just clicked the NFL off after watching
what?
It.
The who?
After I watching it your entire lives.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Because I am a person of principle. Well, unlike some of our friends. Like,
try
hey,
to be.
Did you see the football game last night?
try to be.
Try. And we don't consider the NBA a sport because that is just a hobby. Anything you can play by yourself, it is no longer a sport.
What do you mean? How can you play basketball by yourself?
Horse? You can play horse by yourself. You can
no,
shoot
you can.
The ball.
You can't play horse. Horse requires another person.
No, you can play horse.
No, how do you play horse by yourself?
Just shoot the hoop.
And if you miss it, you get a letter, and then what?
Yeah, and then you just keep going.
No, the principle of the game is if you make it and I miss it, I get it.
Yeah, before someone else.
Yeah. So you can't play it alone. It requires somebody else. You can shoot baskets by yourself. I'll acknowledge that, but you can't play horse by yourself. I don't watch basketball. When I was a kid, when I was a kid, though, it was Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, then Michael Jordan. Those were great.
It took a team to win the game.
Right. Now, basketball, a little bit different.
Yeah, it took the entire team to win the game.
Yeah, I don't enjoy regular season basketball. Would never watch it. Sometimes I'll watch the finals. Sometimes
and then these idiots get on TV and start talking, again, politics or things going on. You're like, just play the sport, please.
Yeah, ESPN is trying to turn that around.
I know. They like having their sports people to be analysts in political arenas and financial. You know, like
pop culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are.
If LeBron James is giving you personal advice on how to invest your money, then guess what?
Except numbers are tanking. Okay.
Yeah.
People are not watching.
He is not. Yeah. Believe me, LeBron James has actually got someone else doing that job for him.
Yeah. He's doing all right. LeBron doing all right. part of the LA Lakers. Here's another email. Mac, I did look at all the pictures, and I just want to say, awesome battlefield study that you did with Corporal Riley. I really like the pictures you put up. I've seen pictures of Lieutenant Bobo, but only in his official Marine Corps picture with his barracks cover on in his alphas. The pictures that you put up of him smoking a cigarette with his Marines and them laughing, standing there, make him a human being like I don't know that I ever saw him before. Just want to send a quick note. The other pictures of the Marines that were killed are really cool because you do get a sense of how young they were. You see them laughing and joking aboard a ship, and then you see their young faces, and holy smoke. But the one I love the most is a corporal by the name of Laurinaitis. He looks like a straight-up criminal. Got his hair long, got a nasty look on his face in another picture, got his hair long in another one, standing in flip-flops outside of a hut in the mud with two of his buddies smiling, looking like a tough guy. Where do we get?
Well, his name sounds like something you don't want to come down with.
Exactly, Laurinaitis. Where do we get such men? We get them from all over the country, from great cities, from some great, some not so great families, but they come into the Marine Corps looking for a little bit of an edge with a chip on their shoulder. What an awesome interview! Thanks for doing that. Mm-hmm. Now you know what? Let me just tell you, it's such a privilege to meet guys like this. And to listen to them talk. And even, you know, part of the story with Jack Riley is those guys have had reunions every other year since I'm not sure when they started. But when he started doing that, that was by snail mail and phone calls. That was mm-hmm. a lot of – it's not like today where you run down somebody's email address and blast it out and we could do it on social media. It was back in the day when that stuff was not easy. And that's the commitment. That's the kind of guys – who we have the privilege of following in their footsteps. And not only in what they do while they're on active duty, but what they do while, after they get off active duty. And they're great examples to the rest of us. And spending about 4 hours with that guy was a highlight. So I love doing it. And we're going to get him back on. I've had people email me. I said, if you listen to it and you have questions, email them, and I'll bring him back on for another interview, and we'll ask them questions that people have after listening to the interview. So by all means, if you listen to it, send him, because he's just a great dude, and he was friends with John Bobo and talks about him and how he died and what he was doing, and whatnot. Nobody signed up to win a Navy Cross that day. They just did what they thought that they were supposed to do. The company commander is killed when he's throwing grenades back, and one explodes as he's throwing it in his hand and kills him. And Mike Getlin, the recipient of the Navy Cross. So anyway, all right. What, you got any plans today?
Yeah, I think I'm heading to Lowe's to go pick up some water filters.
What are you picking up?
The water filter that goes under the sink, you know, the two little cartridges.
Goes on the what?
There's a cartridge, you know, the reverse osmosis system that we have in the house, the drinking water.
Yeah.
So we have it in our garage, and that filters a certain particulars out. That just takes like the hardness, but it just makes a big difference. And then we got it under the sink that we drink. We have a little drinking spot, you know, where we fill up the water, and that comes out. It's like looks like the Sani water bottles. It's that clear. Good.
Really. Do you test your water on a regular basis? You do, don't you?
Yeah, I have a particulate. Of course I do, right?
Right.
Who doesn't? Where is my particulate meter? Here it is. Called a TDS, total dissolved solids.
What?
Yeah. It's called a TDS tester. TDS. Type it in. TDS, Tango Delta Sierra Tester. And you can buy them. They're not that, they're pretty inexpensive. And what it does is, it's a total dissolved salts. So it's an indicator of water quality. The lower the number, the better.
Do you have to test it, or does it hook to the filter?
No, I test it. I pour in a little test cap, and I put this little meter in there. And then what I do is I calibrate it first to make sure. I'll take a little bit of distilled water and put that in there, and it comes up 000. And then I put in like a bottle of Dasani, because Dasani water, bottle water, is always about the same.
Really?
And it's like 40. Yeah, it's about 40. It's the best I've found so far, as far as total TDS goes. And then I did we do the sink, or we do the regular water, and that comes out to about 120. And then the drinking part comes out to about 40, 50, same as the bottled water. Because it goes through all those filter sleeves, you know, the fabric sleeves, carbon sleeves. So, hell, even our dog drinks quality water, even though he'll go in the lake and drink lake water or puddle water. So get a TDS tester. Change your life around.
There you have it. Clean living advice from Mike Musselman. All right, man. I'll talk to you.
All right. Talk to you later.
There you have it. The Gunner here on All Marine Radio. That's right. That'll do it on a Thursday. Nelly, just a dream. I have these pair of Expeditionary Bose speakers that are probably 3 inches by maybe 6 or 7 inches. Yeah, multiple combat deployments with those. Non-Bluetooth. Yeah, lost his girl. Should have got that ring. So McConnell comes in and starts throwing a fit. Because I'd play the music loud. So he sticks his head into my little area. And he's like, Nelly? I'm like, yeah, you got a problem with that? He said, no. He said, it's awesome. I love Nelly. Alright, that'll do it. Don't touch that dial. Interesting discussion about at what point do the Russians get theirs? Waging cyber operations against other sovereign nations in order to destabilize them? How long do we play charades before we pull the string on that? Alright? Is that not an act of war when you do that stuff to other countries? And if it is, then we either need to isolate them economically and make them pay to get them to stop, or we need to start crippling Russian systems. Just so they know, look, we could do this. Is this really what you want to do? So I just look, going through life weak, probably not what you want to do. Have a great day. On a Thursday, which happens to be the fourth day of October, you can believe that. Halloween at the end of the month. We used to celebrate Columbus Day. Yikes. That mercenary. Then Thanksgiving coming up. After the Marine Corps Marathon, the Marine Corps Birthday, Veterans Day, all coming up the next 60 days. So, Have a great day. All Marine Radio on a Thursday. Over and out.